When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of The Wrap right here on the Fike Media Network. Happy Wednesday morning to you all as we're back here to recap the week that was so far in WWE. I'm Keela Cash, and by my side, as always, is my co-captain, my right hand, the sometimes advocate for the rapidly improving Ms. Jada Parker from NXT. I bring to you back on The Wrap, as always, the one, the only, the scout, Salty Scott Young. Welcome back, Salty.
Thank you for having me, Keela. As always, it's a pleasure to chop it up and talk all things WWE. I'm excited about the conversation we're going to have. This week wasn't as good as last week. Still a good week. Everything was fine, but just not as good as last week.
Interesting. I thought that Monday Night Raw was a great show. I thought that really carried the week so far in WWE. Portland was a hot crowd, got a very good show. The premiere of SmackDown in USA was perfectly fine, as we'll get to momentarily. NXT was NXT, had some highs and lows here and there, but I cannot wait to hear your thoughts on what wasn't exactly everything is fine for you.
I'm going to keep it a buck. I thought Raw was just fine. There were some really good elements, but I'm with you on SmackDown. I thought SmackDown was great. I thought they had a really good debut. I like the feel of the show. Meg, you know what I'm saying? Meg, let's keep it a buck there. And the people hating on Megan Thee Stallion, asking for the rock music and Nickelback, I got to get out of here with that. But Raw was okay. Raw was all right.
All right, I can't wait to dive into that with you. But let's talk about the primary talk, which is the primary topic so far this week in WWE, which is, you know, the move of SmackDown from Fox back to USA Network for the first time in 5 years on Friday night this time around. And we got an overrun, you know, that might be used sporadically moving forward for the show. But we got a look at the new logo for SmackDown, which I thought was okay, I got to get used to it a little bit. But I think the biggest controversy that Scott alluded to was the new theme music by Megan Thee Stallion. And I'm like, I like the song. It's fresh. It's charting number one. So what is the issue? And as Scott alluded to as well, some people miss their rock in WWE theme songs for their shows. Well, I'm here to tell you, and I'm a rock aficionado. I love me some alternative rock. Don't get me wrong. I love grunge. I'm ride or die with my rock peeps. But today's rock music,
You don't hear about it.
You don't hear about it. It's not mainstream anymore. There's not a rock song in the top 10 for the Billboard Hot 100. You got to go to the rock charts. That's behind a paywall on Billboard to see what's trending in rock. There's hardly any rock stations where I live in Atlanta on the station. So it's like rock is where it's not right now. I hate to say that. At one point it was, but hip hop is that predominant music genre that is hitting on all cylinders. And for WWE to spend money on Megan Thee Stallion and, hey, drop that song that is popular, why not? So I think the discourse is kind of like out of place for me. You don't have to like the song, but you can at least respect WWE for paying out of pocket for something that is not cheap to add some sheen to their show and some shine to SmackDown with an established Grammy award-winning artist that is hot right now.
And not only that, I mean, anytime you can have her show up, perform live, there's just so many things that go with it. I said Nickelback specifically because that's one of the themes I actually liked that they had of Raw. But it's just like, come on, man, we just got to get with the times. You kind of hit everything on the head. I don't really need to add nothing else. I just found that kind of odd and ironic. And again, just keeping it a buck, it was certainly from a certain demographic. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, and it's cool. You like what you like, but it was, you know, it was definitely a certain corner of the group that was not happy with Meg. But that's a minor thing. I thought the logo, like you said, was okay. But I thought SmackDown as a whole, overall first episode, I thought it was really good.
I thought so too. I will say that the graphics for the match previews, those are slick. Those are really, really good. I want to see what they do for Monday Night Raw when they move to Netflix in January. But my one pet peeve that I noticed on SmackDown a lot was when they ran the graphics for the wrestler's weight. The weight on the screen was wrong when Alicia Taylor was saying the weight live in the arena. I'm like, okay, Lee Fitting, whoever handles the Chiron graphics for the weight, that needs to be checked, because she was saying one thing and then she was off by like, what, 45 pounds for Randy Orton? He's 250 pounds. No, actually, he's 290.
He was
in a former life, but he's 290 now. Like, okay, let's get it together. But otherwise, it was a clean show on USA. We got the picture-in-picture back at the Overrun as well. But let's talk about the opening match of the show, which was for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship, or the WWE Championship, not Universal anymore. Let's dead that. It was Cody Rhodes versus the alleged Tribal Chief, Solo Sikoa. Inside of a steel cage, Triple H came out to welcome us to this new era of SmackDown in USA, set the tone nicely for this steel cage match. And we have talked about this on the show recently, about Solo Sikoa possibly not fitting the bill as the bootleg Tribal Chief. I've had my grievances on this show as well, and I talked about how subpar his match against Cody Rhodes was at SummerSlam for that very undisputed WWE Championship. But I'm here to say that for one night, Solo Sikoa beat the allegations of being mid, and he and Cody Rhodes had a very strong steel cage match for the WWE Championship. Not only that, this was the rare case of a steel cage match that had zero outside interference. That rarely happens in WWE. We got a little blood from Cody. He took some crazy bumps off the cage, and we were entertained. I must say, they tried to add drama by how each guy would escape the cage, over climbing it or through the door. Great dramatics there, thinking that somebody from the bloodline was going to come out and cause interference. But Cody hit the crossroads on Solo to retain the championship clean as a sheet. Zero bloodline interference, and for that, it was a win.
I'll go a step further and say this might have been Solo's best singles match he's ever had. I thought it was really good. I'm thinking back to maybe his match with Drew he had when he first came up. That was really good. I know he's had some no DQ matches, like the one he won the North American title on NXT. That was really good. But from my recollection, man, at least, you know, the bigger the stage, the more important the match. I thought this was the best outing he's had. I thought he looked really good. He actually fit the bill. He was throwing Cody Rhodes around. This is a really good match. Cody took some big risk. Now, I know it's what the babyface does. This is me nitpicking. Never a big fan of the babyface going to the top of the cage, and instead of just escaping, you know, he diving back in for no reason, especially when it doesn't get the win. If it gets the win, that's one thing. But for it not to get the win, it's like, well, you're an idiot. You know, but we're talking about Cody Rhodes, so it almost fits the bill. So what am I complaining about? But I, again, the match was solid. Good way to start the show. One little side note, I do like the fact that Triple H comes out first for all these things. One, for the fact how many people get upset by it. And two, this dude's like, yeah, I'll never get in the ring again, but I'm going to get that pop. I'm definitely going to get that reaction, that opening match. Nah, I'm opening the show. Yeah, good way to start the show.
And we'll get to his biggest show me who I am stunt at the end of SmackDown, which I was gagged at. But yeah, like, listen, I love Triple H's theme song, The Game, Motorhead. When you play that, I'm in the mood already. So I can accept him coming out to open up the show, to greet you to his show, to his brainchild now. This is his baby and he's proud of it. And Michael Cole talks about the Triple H era all the time. So, you know, the Triple H got to go out there and get that shine and set the tone for the evening. But Cody Rhodes, you know, when he went to the top of the cage, and he turned his back. I said, I know that you're not going to do what you did in AEW, 4 or 5 years ago, when you decided to do a moonsault off the top of the cage and break your ankle. So he said, you know what I'm not going to do is that. So let's do a crossbody as safely as possible and not get the win, by the way. Choices took a great suplex by Solo too at one point that was elevated. So he took some bumps in this match for sure. And I will agree with you that Solo had his best WWE match to date on the main roster, his most complete performance. And he looked like somebody that could hang. And I know Cody heard the allegations saying that I can't have a good match against Solo. He said, I'm going to prove y'all wrong and I'm going to keep my name in the wrestler and the wrestler of the year contention contest. So he definitely scored points there. After the match is over, we did get the Bloodline coming out to cause trouble. We had Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa, and Jacob Fatu trying to run interference against Cody Rhodes on behalf of Solo until the real tribal chief comes out. The OTC Roman Reigns is out there ready to make the save. And in a great moment, we had Jacob Fatu ready to go one-on-one with Roman Reigns until Solo pulls him back from the fight. And Cody and Roman Reigns reluctantly take out Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. And they stare each other down and wonder, where do we go from here? And Nick Aldis has an idea per the order and suggestion of the tribal chief, allegedly, Solo Sikoa. He wants a supersized all-time big tag team match involving himself and Jacob Fatu, his enforcer, versus the undisputed WWE champion Cody Rhodes and the OTC Roman Reigns in a tag match at Bad Blood in Atlanta on Saturday, October 5th. And Roman is down for it. Cody is not. He says he is done with the Bloodline. Told Solo as much after the match was over. And he says, nope, this is not my fight. This is not my problem. Leave me be. But we know by the end of the show, he just couldn't let it be.
Yeah. This is cool. It's a good way to extend everything. You don't have another title match. It's fine. Everything's fine with here. We're kind of we're kind of treading water at this point. But yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, it was fine for what it was. Let's get to our next segment on SmackDown, which was Kevin Owens and a mystery partner versus A Town Down Under, Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. And we had a pretty good idea who this mystery partner could be, but they decided to play a little joke on us for a little bit. And it was a guy named Ricky with back hair coming out there to be Kevin Owens' tag team partner. And I was intrigued by Ricky because I was wondering who the hell Ricky is. Never seen Ricky a day in my life. Wanted to see what skills Ricky had. And then someone came to Kevin and says, he's here. No need to worry. And then Kevin says, sorry, Ricky, my tag team partner is in fact in the building and you're no longer needed. And he stuns Ricky. I said, poor Rick. Poor Ricky, man. He gets his $1,000 and he just sent to stage left. And now we get the actual surprise tag team partner, which is Randy Orton. He comes out to a huge ovation as he is huge himself. And this is a fairly fun tag team match. KO and Randy Orton have great chemistry together. A-Town Down Under, they're a good team as well. And we're still waiting for that Austin Theory babyface turn, which should be happening before the end of the year 2025, because Triple H loves to tell long form stories in WWE with a very long payoff. So we get the match, fun action throughout. Then we have the dual draping DDT spot by both KO and Randy before they hit their RKO and stunner respectively on both guys as Randy gets to pin on Grayson Waller. All in all, a very fun television tag team match, made the crowd happy. And to Ricky, dude, our apologies, but at least for two glorious minutes, you got outstanding television exposure.
Yeah, shout out to the little descendant of George the Animal Steel. And yeah, the match was good. Good tag match. A-Town Down Under is a good underneath team that can take these type of losses, and it doesn't really mean much because they can sneak a win at any time. Orton gets a nice bounce back, or another win for him. This is all good. Kevin Owens gets a bounce back win. It's all good. All good things going for them. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know if they go back after the Bloodline. I don't know if Randy decides he finally wants a shot at Cody, because, you know, we do Cody Roman, then what you got Cody doing. So I'm curious to see what we got going on with these two. They might as well continue on going after the tag titles, because I don't see them having much else going on.
No, it's pretty barren over there. So either you're going to be fighting for the tag team titles, or you're going to be fighting each other. And that might be something that's coming up very soon, as once again, Austin Theory displayed adorable dumbass tendencies. That's his strong suit, being a lovable dumbass. But he needs to be taken seriously too, so he could kind of balance the two out in due time, which he will, I believe. So all in all, fun TV match. Got me hyped for whatever Randy and KO are going to do next on SmackDown as we make that move to USA. Next up is Nia Jax, coming out looking gorgeous. And she is talking about her next opponent for the WWE Women's Championship. And Bayley comes out, says, "I want my rematch. I got next." And Nia Jax is like, "Nah, been there, done that." Tiffy Time comes out to give the assist to Nia Jax. And Naomi comes out to provide the assist for Bayley. And this leads to an interesting dynamic for this week's SmackDown on USA. So there will be a tag team match involving Nia Jax and Tiffany Stratton versus Naomi and Bayley. Whoever gets to pin on Nia Jax or Tiffany will earn a shot at the WWE Women's Championship at No Mercy. However, if Naomi or Bayley gets pinned in this tag team match, they must leave SmackDown and go presumably to Monday Night Raw. So this match is not exactly predictable. And also knowing that WWE tends to cap their pay-per-view matches at 5 or 6 these days, it does lend to the possibility of an upset on Friday's show.
I think Bayley gone. I think she's heading to Raw. I think she'd be a nice boost over there to that division. And I think we're in for an interesting dynamic with her and Damage Control. They just can't stay apart. I can't see Naomi going to Raw just yet. I think she's going to be next in line. But yeah, I think this is end of the road for Bayley. I see Tiffany and Nia holding strong. Bayley's gaping hole opens a way for somebody to step up. Naomi, this would be her opportunity. But yeah, I definitely think Bayley's gone.
Yeah, and as we keep teasing, as we'll get to for Monday Night Raw, if Bianca ever sees Bayley again, that is a jump scare, because that is a trigger for her due to the torment they've had for the last couple of years. So if she does move to Monday Night Raw, it is going to be interesting fast. Even though she's on SmackDown as well, but with those tag team titles flowing around both shows, you will be seeing each other a lot.
I didn't think about that, but that's probably because you've been talking about that for a while as far as the trigger for Jade and Bianca. And I didn't think about that, but that's another reason why Bayley's probably gone, because she'll see them together. I think all of that is absolutely leading towards all this. Meechan's been getting more time on SmackDown. There's a reason for that. They've got people that they're ready to probably fill those holes, or at least hold the ground until Charlotte comes back.
Yeah, and that should be sometime next year for sure, because I know that injury is going to keep her out probably until next year's Royal Rumble, if I had to guess. But yeah, a lot of possibilities for upward mobility on SmackDown for the women's division coming up, and it could be an upset. Bayley could be moving to Monday Night Raw, and Bianca Belair, I will say my prayers, because I know that is going to be a trigger one way or another, because they've made it a point to keep them separated as of late. They don't interact that much, but if she's circling around Damage Control more and more, and EO and Kyrie offer an olive branch of forgiveness and say it was Asuka and Dakota Kai's fault all along, they poisoned the well, then you never know what we're going to get for sure. But let's get to match number 5 in our best of possibly 7 series between Andrade and Carmelo Hayes. I thought this was another good match in their series of matches. Crazy Spanish fly off the barricade on the floor by both guys early on. And to call back their match 2 where there was a messed up La Mystica spot, Melo hit it perfectly for a near fall. And we got that great twisting DDT finisher from Andrade off the second rope to pin Carmelo Hayes, earns a shot at the United States Championship against LA Knight this Friday on SmackDown. So that should be a very good match. Do I expect a clean finish? Absolutely not, because Melo wants revenge, which gives us match 6 in this series. And I really hope that they try to put this match on Bad Blood. Like, let's stack the card. Let's get 7 matches on here, or 8. You know, the show's going to start early at 8 o'clock. Like, we can do 7 or 8. It's doable. Eight's a lot, but they're starting.
Yeah, that's like, a lot out of Triple H to put 8 matches on a random PLE these days.
It is, but you know, I want him to test himself. You know, think outside the box. Add 3 more matches. You're starting an hour earlier at 6 o'clock because of the UFC pay-per-view that same night, I believe. So, hey, or they're doing like a UFC event that same evening. So if they're doing 6 o'clock, dead serious, 6 o'clock start time.
P.M.?
P.M. Eastern. It's a UFC event. I think it's a pay-per-view or something on ESPN. And it's at 10 o'clock and they want a hard out. So they cannot compete against them head to head. 6.
All right.
That's why I said they can try. They can try to put 8 on there.
Yeah, we might not be doing a live show for that one. 6 o'clock.
I just blew Scott's mind. He says, "We'll see. What we're not going to do in 2 weeks is a live show."
6 o'clock. I'm still gonna have the kids up if we did do a live show, but when we started the show, the kids would still be up.
Listen, I would love to see Scott's kids on the show as they run around.
Oh, you would. Live and in color.
Oh my gosh. So I just blew your mind. Yeah, there's a 6 o'clock start time for this show. 6 o'clock PM on the dot.
Well, just a couple things, then we can move on. First of all, the series is done. So I'm going to go ahead and dash that dream you got going on.
Wow.
That series is done. They done. That's over with. They done. Finito. They're over with each other. They done broke up.
Okay. We're going to hold this comment for like the future. So when Melo interferes, there will be a match 6. And I will say, I told you so. I try to tell you, because Melo right. is not going to give Andrade peace. Okay. He's not going to let that man go gently into that good night and win a championship. There's no way. Absolutely no way. So,
Or he waits until he wins it and then he goes after him.
Well, possibly.
But they ain't going to do LA Knight like that. So,
yeah. Yeah. We'll see. We're going to put a pin up. We're going to put a pin on it. Come back on the next week and see who's right. All right, now it's time to discuss the main event angle of the show. It's time for a double dose of the Tribal Chief, the real Tribal Chief, the OTC. And you know me, it was Roman Reigns coming out there. And we go picture in picture. And for like 3 minutes, if you look at the other side of the screen, he's posing and he's like stunting, he's flexing and whatnot. For 3 minutes, this is going on. Just dead air airing side by side, picture in picture. We come back and Nick Aldis is in the ring, contract in hand. And to prove that Roman Reigns is not a changed, humbled man, he tells all of us not to acknowledge him just yet, but he says, "I am the only tribal chief that matters, Ulafala or not. I run shit here. Nick Aldis, you can go bye bye. I don't need a contract. I don't need a tag team partner. I got me. Okay, I got me, myself, and I got this." Now, that's bold talk for someone who needs some help. So Cody comes out there trying to, you know, say, "I don't need your help either. you know? And then Roman says, this is my ring. This is my show. This is my WWE. And Cody says, oh yeah, it was until WrestleMania when I ended your championship run and you went home. So this is my ring. This is my show. This is my reign as champion. So they basically having like a pissing contest in the ring. Then Solo and company come out there and they jump Cody and Roman. So after all that big talk of I don't need help, I don't need you, I got me. Well, apparently they need each other. So after they fight off the bloodline and Solo pulls Jacob back one more time, like, no, this is not your fight. This is what we're not going to do. We have both guys and Cody and Roman sign the contract, pin their names on the dotted line, and it is official. It will be Solo and Jacob versus Cody and Roman tag team match Bad Blood in Atlanta, despite Scott realizing it's at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern on Peacock. It will not be airing at that exact time, this match, but it will be starting at 6 o'clock p.m. And spoiler alert, we will most likely not be live. We'll deliver this show to you Sunday morning at some time. So it is what it is. But Scott, your thoughts. Kids. He says, I got kids. Like Heath Slater, I got kids. I got kids. They got bedtimes. They have to adhere to. If we start the show early, then we're running around the house. Cannot have that. But Scott.
Hey, Mom, what show am I watching? Oh, Dad, let me watch Hell in a Cell.
What's that?
Right. What's that? Oh, it's where they fight in hell. Yeah, it's not going on.
Is it really hell?
Yeah.
Yes. It's hell in a ring. It's hell in a cell with people there, and they're cheering you on as hell unfolds. But Scott, your thoughts on this segment involving Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes forming the 2024 version of the Mega Powers?
Yeah, okay. yeah, all right. First, they little brother and Cody Rhodes right now. Roman Reigns just walking around like, you just hold my weight for me, essentially. You know what I'm saying? I just don't understand why Cody got all in his feelings, like, oh yeah, well, watch this. If you gonna do it, I'm gonna do it too. You got the belt, bro. Like, at the end of the day, you got the belt. You are the dude. And until you start acting like that, Roman's in your head. I don't like the way they're playing this right now. Cody needs to decisively beat Roman Reigns the next time they wrestle for this to make any sense. Because if Roman does beat him in the next matchup, then essentially you've proven it. Because even when Cody was like, it was, you ain't really say that with your chest, though. You ain't look that man in his eyes. You ain't give a little grin afterwards. You kind of said it like it was, hoping he ain't punch you in your mouth. There's a whole different vibe to it. The way you was talking before you won that title, when you had Roman all shook, you ain't talking like that no more. You don't have that same energy. So I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But I thought it was okay. I think the tag match will be really good, though. Fatu going to show out.
100%. Like, he's going to just ball out in this match. It's going to be a star-making performance for him. And they know where the money is. They know the money resides with Roman and Jacob Fatu at a future major PLE, and Solo is a stopgap in between. So they know this is where the money feud is down the road, and I'm here for that. And yeah, I agree with you. Cody, I wanted a bit more edge to his promo. Like, this is your show. This is your ring. This is your reign. Put some stank on it. You was in that man's face talking about what was going to happen to him if he lost the championship the year before and you was a prophet a year later. So why don't you just say it with your whole chest out? Let it be known. Hey, I took you out and your whole family turned on you. How about that? They did it again. You lost your whole damn family. And now it is what it is, but did not deliver that. So we'll see what they do on Friday, because they're both going to be in the building for the show. So I need that spiciness there. Even though they're tag team partners, the animosity is still strong, and we need to showcase that heading into Bad Blood. So overall, fun show, great debut for SmackDown back on USA, and Megan Thee Stallion, get your coins. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, get your bread.
Yes, get your paper. WWE's pockets, when they want to, they could run deep for good music. And I also read that Def Rebels' time in WWE might be coming to a close. Amen.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
Listen, we thank him for his Bloodline contributions to theme songs and his Joshi music themes, but he can go. It's time to go. Pack it up. Deuces.
So how'd Raw go?
Well, this is what you really want to get to. And I just want to know exactly what element of this show really made Scott salty. So let's talk about CM Punk coming out top of the show. And I thought this is one of his better promos. He was serious. You know, he had that tone, that husky tone, that gravelly old man tone that basically said, I am old and weary. I don't have that much left in the tank, but I got one more Hell in a Cell match in me. I talked to my sister, talked to my wife, said, don't do it. But you know what? I'm going to do it because this man, Drew McIntyre, has crossed the line. All I wanted to do was come up here back in WWE, win some championships, make some money. My goal wasn't to make friends, but I made a mortal lifetime enemy in Drew McIntyre. He has crossed the line. He has dissed my wife and my dog with that bracelet. He's gone too far. I've been to the hospital not once, but twice. Once in my hometown, bloodied and battered. So one of us, figuratively speaking, gonna die in this Hell in a Cell match. Will it be me? Will it be you? I'm not promising death per se, but I am promising that one of us will not be coming back out of this the same ever again. So he basically said, Drew, I will see you in hell. And that was the end of the promo. I liked it. Kept it at one tone. Wasn't over the top. Sounded battered. Sounded worn out. But it sounded real to me. And it was probably one of his better promos in WWE since his return back in November of last year. And, you know, it's tough to promise kayfabe murder in a match. It's very brazen to do. We've seen some gnarly cage matches very recently at All Out with Hangman and Swerve. So that is the standard of debauchery that you're going to try to achieve here. I don't know how far they're going to go. I expect a lot of blood from both guys. I do expect that. I expect crazy shit. I do. But how far will they go? Because there are standards here. Burn a man's house down, syringe to the mouth. Take somebody's bracelet and then you put in your junk and then you put the junk in his mouth and it's like, okay. The residuals of that in his mouth and then you send him to the hospital. So like the scale of revenge in this match, I'm very curious to see. But Scott, your thoughts on this opening segment to Monday Night Raw?
I thought it was fine. It probably was his best promo. I mean, it was probably his best promo since he's been back in WWE. But this still wasn't it for me. I'm still waiting on that, like, I'm throwing whatever they gave me away and I'm just going to say what I want promo. I don't know. He probably hasn't been given anything to say, but it just doesn't feel like that. As far as this blood feud that he's in, yeah, this was good, but this wasn't on par with like the MJF promos. When I'm thinking blood feud and CM Punk, this wasn't on par with his Adam Page promos. Like he's just missing something. You know, and I don't know what more you can ask to get out of him. And then you start promising death when we know we're not going to get that in WWE. And I get you want to get the serious tone, but we, as serious as it's going to get, we might get a flaming table. We might get a flaming table. I could see that happening. I could see them going on the ring, getting the table and doing a nice flaming table spot. Ain't nobody getting nobody's going to have something sticking out of their head. You know, we're not going to have a huge gash on their head. There's not going to be anything like that. There's going to be some kendo sticks, the normal. But what are we talking about? I don't know. I just feel like I still haven't gotten the one.
We talked about this a few weeks ago, and that in the beginning of this feud, before they touched, before Punk was cleared, it was fun roasting. It was great shade. It was a great energy between the two of them. And then that first match happened at SummerSlam over that bracelet, and it kind of watered things down. We had to get back on track via the strap match at Bash in Berlin, which was good despite the red light, green light of it all. But as I said a few weeks ago, there is a hollowness to the beef now that doesn't feel authentic as it did before because it plateaued. And as you said, his promos against MJF are far superior to what he's doing with Drew McIntyre. And honestly speaking, when Seth comes back, that is where the real energy is going to be, because I feel that animosity between the two of them anytime they're in the ring together. That electricity is alive and well, and you see both guys have a true dislike for each other, whether they're playing into it or there's some legit beef there, but you feel it. There's a tenor in how they talk to each other and how they get in their faces. Drew and Punk, it's like they're playing the part of like, we got beef and we're trolling each other on social media and we're doing things to build up to the match. And from the moment this started, we always said bad blood, Hell in a Cell, that'll be the conclusion. We have arrived here and we expect the plateau and the ultimate finish of this feud. I'm fine with that. But yeah, it feels a bit empty now because we're running out of things to talk about and say. And this feud has run its course. It's been good for Drew this year to get into another level as a heel. And Punk, it gave him something to do when he wasn't wrestling. But now I want this kind of done with, and I really want to see CM Punk and Seth for next year heading into WrestleMania season. And if Punk is going to be focused on Gunther for a bit, cool. But I think the actual heat and where the money will be him and Seth next year.
Yeah, there's a good possibility of that. But yeah, I have no doubt the match will be good. I'm just waiting on the one.
The one. Who is the one, you say?
Oh, just the one promo. But as far as the one, the person who is the one, you know, you could take your pick. Lyra's still it, though.
Oh, my gosh.
Congratulations to Lyra. Just so you know, and that guy gives hope to anybody. Shout out to him.
Listen, congrats to him for locking down the Red Lobster. Listen, congrats to him for locking down the Red Lobster franchise. Okay, he handled the deal, closed it, and he finessed it. Congratulations to that man.
I'm gonna go ahead and tell you, he's been working on that since like grade school. Because that's how you. Congratulations, man. Congratulations. Your hard work paid off.
Listen, that's soulmate stuff right there. That's love at first sight. Stuff.
Yeah.
And when you grow up and fall in love, it's a beautiful thing. So I'm very happy for them. And I tried to sell Scott on Lyra for a long time, but apparently one Monday night, he saw the light. I'm like, thank you. I try to tell you. It was a vignette for me. I said, who is this beautiful woman running in the forest? Who is this woman? She's beautiful. Scott finally saw the vision. Thank you.
Yep. I'm on board. I'm on the woo train, you know. I'm on board.
Okay. All right. Let's get to our first major match of the night, which was Sheamus versus Pete Dunne, the Bruiserweight. I enjoyed this match. Now, somebody in the production area who handles graphics had jokes. Somebody was watching those old Hangman graphics on Dynamite, and they said, Pete Dunne does not like being called Butch. He's offended by that. I said, what a fun fact that is. That needs to be a running gag now. Like, he doesn't like being called Butch, you know. Just want to clarify that for the record. And I thought this match was really good. Like, these guys go out there and they just pound each other. They beat each other up. It's brutal. I knew I was going to get Scott. Listen, I may.
I'm gonna let it go because I know, but it's like, God dang, they pounding each other though. Like,
I knew when I said it, he was going to say pause. But they were. They pound each other. They brutalize each other. They go out there and they just fight. And I love it. And Sheamus just delivers those shots. So does Pete Dunne. Love the physicality. And at one point, we had Sheamus getting the dub almost. And then Pete Dunne tries to introduce a shillelagh. That backfires. Then out of nowhere, he just went to his local Dick's Hardwood store or sporting goods store and found a cricket bat, snuck it underneath the ring, grabbed that cricket bat, and he gave Seamus a love tap. That was not a shot that really like would hurt, you know, but Seamus had to sell it like, oh my God, this hurts. And then Pete Dunne got the dub. So we kind of, even here in this series, kind of want to see him run it back. And we need that good old Donnybrook stipulation with pints of Guinness barrels out there and Seamus's family photo albums of his ancestors and all that stuff for this match, because that's the only way to settle the score is like an old fashioned Donnybrook, you know, those old fashioned brawls with shillelaghs and cricket bats and ass whoopings. Bring it on. I'm here for it.
Yeah, and call Finley and have him be the special guest referee. I'm all on board for it. Yeah, the match was good. Finish was not. If they weren't already the Brawling Brutes, I'd say I'd rather see these two in a best of something series than become tag team. They could be the mini bar. But this was fine. It was fine. A good way to continue the feud. The finish was not good, though. The shillelagh being introduced, that's definitely a Triple H thing. Where are we going from this? Is Pete Dunne getting elevated or does Seamus get his win back? I feel like now we're on to 50-50 booking where one guy gets a win 1 week, the heel comes back and cheats the next week, then we get the rubber match. I'd like to see somebody just kind of pause, dominate the other person for a while, and then, you know, the other one can get a big win when it matters, you know, a number one contenders match or, some type of singles match where with a stipulation. But I feel like we're into 50-50 booking unless Pete Dunne is going to pick up another win and really, you know, decisively beat Seamus.
Yeah. And I want Pete Dunne to actually win the feud outright. Like, why not? Like, Seamus has been established for a very long time in WWE. Why not just give Pete Dunne the victory, win the final match, get him over if you're trying to build him up as someone? And we kind of talked about the Imperium tease as well. Get him in that crew. Why not? And it'll sell for me. So hopefully they will establish him as a star by having him beat a star that's been there a long time, because Seamus will be fine. He'll bounce back. He'll find a way through and he'll be okay. So I think that Pete Dunne needs the elevation now because he just went to NXT, lost a few to Trick Williams. So now it's time to level up. Now, granted, there's still that window of opportunity for Pete because he did beat Trick. Trick beat him in that last man standing match. And if Trick becomes an NXT champion, they can go a third time. So there is like two little avenues they can go there as well. But for Monday Night Raw, I do need Pete Dunne to win this feud against Seamus outright, preferably in a Donnybrook match sometime down the road very soon.
You really want this Donnybrook match, huh? You really trying to see some pints getting thrown around and some barrels getting tossed at people?
Absolutely. Those Donnybrooks have not missed.
No, there
has not been
they
a single it. Bad Donnybrook match.
No, you're not wrong.
Thank you very much. All right. Now let's get to our next match, which was Natalya versus Zoe Stark. And, you know, for the time they were given, it was all right. But unfortunately, I don't care about the Pure Fusion Collective. And I don't really care about Natalya, Zelina Vega, and Lyra, who I enjoy. I truly love me some Lyra, but I don't care about this feud.
Yeah, the Rowdy Rough Girls versus the OnlyFans didn't turn out too well, but it was fine.
Wow. Wow. And I'm trying to figure out which is which.
Of what? The Rowdy Rough Girls?
Yes, because it could go either way.
Oh, they're definitely Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That's definitely the Rowdy Rough Girls. And Natalya and her sister, they just haven't opened it up as the OnlyFans.
Oh. I am going to quickly segue to our next segment, which was a good one.
Tell me when I'm telling lies, though.
Okay, Punk Jr. I say that you're being very honest and truthful. I can't say that you're lying to me. Tip of the cap to you.
I heard but, say it today. I got stuck in my head.
Oh, my God. Okay. So, and she was good on NXT. Like, it's funny how that happens when you have CM Punk in a ring who knows how to cut a promo, and she comes out there and cuts her most natural promo to date. Miracle how that happens. Do that every week without him there, and you will be a money heel, Roxanne Trust. So we had some good backstage segments last night on Monday Night Raw, or should I say Monday? And one of them was Finn Balor talking to Rhea Ripley. And Finn being an ass saying, it's your fault, Rhea, why the Judgment Day is no more as a family, because you were selfish, just like Damian Priest was selfish. All you cared about was yourselves and the championships you won, and you left us here twisting in the wind. And Rhea says, I love my family. I fought for my family. I supported my family. Anytime you guys butted heads, I was trying to be the mediator here, trying to solve the problem for you guys because I love my family. But you were the one that stabbed us in the back. So I guess now that you got what you want, now you got to deal with the consequences, basically. And Finn Balor, as we thought for a long time, he was the wingman for Dirty Dominic Mysterio, because he said, you know what, Rhea, you know what I did? When you were away and when Liv was trying to tempt Dominic Mysterio with chicken tendies and PlayStation 5s and 2K24s and hotel room keys, I told him to go for it. I was the devil on his shoulder, encouraging him to cheat on you. Yes, it was me. And I thought he was going to say, yes, it was me. It was me all along. That would have been funny. But Jey Uso intervened and told Finn to shoo, which I liked. But it really was a good segment that established why Finn has smoke for Rhea too, as this Judgment Day feud continues. And Finn, you did win one thing. Street trash gear has made the air. Golf claps for you. Didn't get the name change, but you might make $100 off the merch. So good for you.
Yeah. And also shout out Rikishi. You're gonna love the what you're seeing with Jay and Rhea. Yeet. yeah. Finn, you know, I like that. And you know, he's the ultimate bad guy. Rubbed it in Rhea's face. Rhea was really kind of pouring her soul out. Like, I loved y'all. You know, we was legit family. And I like that Finn was like, yeah, I just want you to know it was me. Like, I like when a villain will tell you, I want you to know it was me. I wanted to be the one to tell you face to face. Rhea could have just punched him in the eye, which would have been fine too. And there's nothing Finn could have done about it. Like, there's nothing he could have done about it. Because if he would have tried, then she would have just body slammed him. he was, you know, balls, a lot of balls right there by Finn Balor to say that, because Rhea Ripley could have broke that man. But yeah, segment was good. Finn was good. I thought everything worked out real well here. This worked out good.
Yeah, I agree. It was a really good match. It was a really good segment, I should say. It told us a good story, gave us an explanation as to why Finn now also has a lot of disdain and smoke for Rhea Ripley. And he bragged about what he did. And listen, Rhea, if you was watching the show, there was evidence. We had Finn and Liv arriving to the building together plotting, and he was, you know, pretending to cock block for Dirty Dominic Mysterio when he was really being the wingman, encouraging this relationship. So he always had the fix in terms of what was going to happen down the road. But all in all, good stuff. As we get to our in-ring segment involving the aforementioned Jey Uso, is he's getting ready to face Bron Breakker next Monday for the Intercontinental Championship. And Jey came out there, you know, he does his yeet stuff. And it was funny, the Portland crowd missed the first yeet cue, and he had to yeet him up. And they kind of got on rhythm eventually when he was going through his promo. But then Bron Breakker comes out there, and Bron Breakker, let me tell you something. We had a feeling he was going to be like great on the main roster, but he's exceeded expectations being strong on the microphone as well. Talking about, hey, I made it here because of me. Yeah, I'm a Steiner, but I didn't need my family to get to where I am today. I earned my stripes. I earned this championship. This championship fights for me as I fight for it. So I'm ready to go next week, because you've been here, what, 14 years, and you haven't accomplished what I've done in, what, 6 months on the main roster? Like, Braun was spitting bars, and I was like, I'm here for it. And then Jey says, oh, I'm going to remind you that I can cut promos too. Let me take the shades off. Here to remind you, I was winning championships on this roster when you was still in diapers. Now, if I did mathematics, Braun was not in diapers. I think he might have been like in middle school when he saw you work 14 years ago. Strong possibility. But he says, I'm going to dog walk your ass next week. That's what I'm going to do to you since you're the dog. And then when he said, I'm going to make this short and sweet, like your NFL career, I audibly screamed because that was like shade. And Braun felt like, oh, no, you did not cut me like that. So he tries to go for that 23 mile per hour spear and Jay hits it first. I love this segment. Like Braun was great bringing that fire out of Jay, and they just really hit it off in a good way. And this was better than what Jay did with Damian Priest earlier this year for the World Heavyweight Championship. One segment, and I'm locked in for this championship match next Monday.
Yeah, this is great. This might have been my favorite segment on the show. I thought that Jay was going to say short and sweet like a Shannon Sharp video, but I thought his line worked a little bit better. But no, the segment was great. The spear counter was fantastic by Oos. And yeah, I loved everything about it.
I'm sorry.
Shout out to Jay for the line. He hit me with a curve, but I think his line was better.
IG was a time last Wednesday. Was it not a time? It was a time.
Shout out Michelle.
I did love Michelle Beadle saying it wasn't me. Just want to clarify that. I was not on the tape. Hey, listen, that
did
was the
she?
Most. Yes, she did. She said that was not me.
No need.
She tweeted it like it wasn't me. I was not the Michelle in question.
Listen,
that was the biggest pop Michelle Beadle has gotten in a good 8 years. She's leaving ESPN, real talk. So, like, good for you, Michelle. Fire that one off. Let them know it wasn't you. I laughed. Okay, that broke me on the show. I was not ready for that. Oh, my God. All right. Oh, Jesus. All right, let's get to our next segment, which was... And now I love this storyline now. I love it for various reasons. So it was a new day. It was Kofi and Xavier against the Judgment Days, Finn Balor, and JD McDonagh, the floating head, for the WWE World Tag Team titles. Now, Xavier Woods told Jay, Rhea, and Damian backstage, we got this tonight. I don't need your help. We don't need your help. We want to win this fair and square. We got this. Respect our wishes, honor our request by staying in the back. And they say, okay, cool. Make sure you beat them, though. We got this. So we have the match. It's going pretty good. Back and forth action goes to a commercial break. New Day gains control. At one point, Xavier Woods has the win. Elbow drop, floating head, wrap, right? Judgment Day comes out there, causing trouble. Carlito, Liv, and Dirty Dominic Mysterio. Kofi tries to mediate the situation until the LWO comes out of nowhere to intervene. As all of this is happening, Kofi lands trust fall on everybody. The referee takes his raggedy ass out of the ring, just leaves Xavier Woods, who's got like a 10 count on floating head, to get the dub. Joe Tessitore, who is becoming a great, 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 great play-by-play guy, was like, what is this referee doing? Like, Xavier's got the win. What is he doing? Like, this is the dumbest referee I've ever seen. Like, what is he doing? Like, this referee is highly incompetent. So Xavier says, I have the win here. What are you doing? So the sorry-ass ragged referee gets back in there. But unfortunately for Xavier Woods, he is going to be taken out by the Judgment Day as Finn gets a blind tag. Hissy, coup de grace, 1, 2, 3, Judgment Day retains the championships. After the match is over, Kofi and Xavier Woods are in the ring, and Kofi tries to help Woods up. Woods says, get off me. He's visibly upset. We go backstage, and Kofi tells Xavier Woods, hey, bud. After he's confronting the LWO, because Woods is over it. Like, you know, what are you guys doing? Leave us alone. This was not your business. Why were you out there? Kofi tells Xavier Woods after the fact, oh, by the way, I asked him to come out there because I knew we would be outnumbered by the Judgment Day. And Xavier Woods says, what? After I said that I didn't want anybody out there helping us, he says, well, we need help because E's not here. I'm like, oh, there it is. Because E's not here because we don't have the backup. And then he says, so it's just me and you. So just me, right? So I'm nobody. That's what Woods says. So Woods is frustrated, upset, pissed off, fiery, and he walks away. I love this. We had the Odyssey Jones situation a few weeks ago. He's fired from WWE due to domestic violence allegations against him. And I'm goodbye. See you later. Bye. Goodbye. You won't be missed. But I'm glad we're back to business here with the New Day, because we are approaching the 10-year anniversary of their formation in November. And clearly they're telling a story about things not being the same since Big E was injured 2 years ago, going on three. And I don't think they're breaking up, but it's highly implied tensions are rising. And I think it will end with Big E coming back to mend fences between the two. But the drama they're bringing thus far is really good. And I can tell that Triple H is allowing them to tell this story because they have vowed they will never break up. But this is the closest we're going to get to it. And I love the tease. And Xavier Woods for weeks has been great with his reacting, and his acting was especially strong on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, I think the story, I'm going to let it play out a little bit more. I didn't like the start. Don't like Kofi doing that. Doesn't really fit Kofi. Doesn't make sense for Kofi to do that and not just tell Xavier Woods when you got a whole squad coming out there. like, it's not like you had one person. You told a whole squad to come out there. It's not good. It's not a good start. Like, Xavier should be mad at you, bro. Like, next week, Kofi should 100% be like, yo, you were right. That was completely out of line. I'm an idiot. I should have never done that. I told 20 people about this plan and not you. That was completely out of line. Like, it needs to be on. That's real. That's real. Somebody does something stupid like that, you acknowledge, you're like, yo, my bad. And that's what they need to do. Cause that's crazy. You told a whole unit. Like, you told a whole crew
to pull up.
To pull up. It's crazy. You told another gang to pull up, but didn't tell your squad. That's crazy. So no, I agree with you. I think the story will be good. I think the big reunion at the end is going to be great whenever we get it. But as far as the first step we took off the steps, I think we face planted.
I slightly disagree, because Kofi has been acting reckless for weeks now. He's been acting so out of pocket. He's been acting egregiously with Xavier Woods. Like, Xavier Woods told this man to his face, we don't need help. Kofi says, I'll be right back. Didn't tell him where he was going. He went to a whole other crew and said, LWO, hey, listen, I need your help tonight. I'm not going to tell Woods anything, but he's with it. He understands the importance and the necessity of the situation. We're trying to win these tag team titles. We know we can't do it alone. We know Judgment Day going to be running on us. So we need a whole squad of strangers that we don't really mess with helping us in our time of need. And I'm not going to tell my partner nothing. He is going to roll with it. He going to understand. And then he acts surprised when Woods is upset about, why did you get this crew to help us when I told you we didn't need any help? Kofi is asking for it. If by some outside chance Xavier is turning, it is justified, because Kofi has been a horrible friend and an awful tag team partner as of late. It will be deserved, because he keeps pressing his luck. And Monday, he took it way too far. You asked a whole crew, hey, roll up. And they did. And y'all lost.
Yeah, that was a wild move. Wild move.
Insanity. Referee deserves smoke too. He's an idiot. But Kofi, he really tried it. Truly, he did. But let's get to probably my favorite segment from Monday Night Raw. Bronson Reed and Braun Strowman were supposed to have a match. First move in, Braun slams Bronson Reed into the turnbuckle. Ring rope snap immediately. Great spot. So what happens? Can't have a match without ropes. So they brawl and they fight. And in one of the greatest spots that shocked me until I saw the replay was that when Braun Strowman was trying to run after Bronson Reed, we had this brother in a blue t-shirt just fly high in the air. He flew high in the air and he knocked down Braun Strowman. And I thought to myself, what indie wrestler wins a business for themselves and did this? I said, this is incredible. It happened out of nowhere. And then we get the replay of Bronson Reed throwing a whole human and just throwing him at Braun Strowman. When that happened, I was like, what is this? That was one of the greatest spots I ever saw, because I really thought for like 5 seconds that brother went in for business. For him.
That's crazy, yo. What? That's wild. You thought somebody springboard off the barricade and chose to do it on Braun Strowman?
Listen,
of all people,
listen, Scott, that's how clean the camera angle was, because he flew.
That's crazy. That's the guy you think somebody would choose to try? And Bronson Reed right there too?
Listen,
like, you know how wrestlers be like, oh, nah, you're not messing with him. They would both just, what?
Listen, WWE's trying to win an Emmy. And that man flew, like, the camera angle had that man flying legitimately until you saw that Bronson launched that man on Braun. I laughed. Once I saw the context of it.
The context? You thought this man... You thought this man showed up to try to get a contract.
Yes, I did. Listen, you thought this dude
put an RVD and springboard. It was trying to springboard crest and kick Braun Strowman in the throat.
It was a clean throw and a clean landing. So I loved it. So after that happened, we had Braun and Bronson Reed go through a barricade. They fight through the crowd. They fight in the production area. They fight backstage. We have Bronson Reed deliver a tsunami to Braun Strowman through the table, which was great. And then both guys, I think there's a little bit hokey at the end, but because of what happened after they went through the fake ass wall, when stuff fell down on top of them, that was actually funny because we needed that effect to sell it a little bit more. But overall, like, Bronson Reed and Braun Strowman, oh, they're great horsemen. They're exceptional. Like, this Bronson Reed revival tour has done wonders for him. We've wanted this for over a year. And finally, Triple H woke up and started pushing this man. And Braun Strowman, as we said numerous times, one of the best rehires WWE has done. Like, he's a little slower now, but when it comes to moments like this and getting other horses over, he's great. And the things they've done to each other in the last few weeks, I'm here for. And we need a match with Stips and pure recklessness, because they would go all out. And I can imagine the tsunami that Bronson Reed would do from a very high place. So I'm all in on this feud. I love it.
Yeah, this, you're talking about adding a couple matches to the Bad Blood card. This is one of the matches I would probably add. It's got a lot of juice to it. It'll be completely different from everything else. It'll be a hoss battle. Braun Strowman is shown to really work well with big men. dating all the way back to probably some of the singles matches he had with Kane, mm-hmm. some of the last few singles matches he had with Big Show. Mm-hmm. Like, he's always worked well with bigger guys. Him and Gunther had a really good match when he had the white pants. Mm-hmm. Like, I just
not the white pants.
Shop. I just remembered the white pants because I thought he was gonna win because he had the white pants, and I was like, oh, he might win it today. And he tapped out to like a key lock or something. He hurt his elbow. Yeah, he works well with the big guys. So, this was a really fun segment. Got both guys over as monsters, and it gives Bronson Reed and Braun Strowman a reason to continue fighting without having Braun Strowman actually beat Bronson, which is the purpose. So that way, when Bronson does beat Braun, it means something. So they've done a really good job with this feud.
Yeah, I think so too. It's worked wonders for both guys, and Bronson Reed is more over because of it. And Braun Strowman is one of the better big men in WWE. And I remember those matches against Big Show and Kane. All of them were good. Mm-hmm. All of them, not one missed. And he can go when he really has a great opponent that can just bring that out of him. And Bronson Reed, when the time comes, I think they would definitely deliver. But let's get to Sami Zayn still asking for that championship match against Gunther for the World Heavyweight Championship. Gunther's saying, no, like, you're not worthy. You don't deserve this. Move along, pal. Leave me be. And Ludwig Kaiser comes out there to run interference as well. So they beat up on Sami, but Sami counters with a Huluva kick to Gunther, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And they're setting the foundation for this match, which will be great. We saw them at WrestleMania put in that work. It was exceptional. So I expect them to do this match. Will it be at Bad Blood? I don't know. That's been rumored to be another match on this card, potentially. I'm all for that. But we know what both guys are capable of. With higher stakes, with a bigger championship, they will tear down the house for sure.
Shout out to Goldberg, who is also was also my favorite wrestler as a kid as well. So me and Gunther have that going on as well. This match will be great. This is a different thing, as Gunther doesn't want to challenge him because he is the last guy to beat him for a title. So it makes sense that Gunther would not want to challenge him. I would take it a step further. I would have Gunther go. I would have somebody else challenge Gunther, and Sami Zayn just always waiting in the background. You keep him strong. You keep him going, you know, picking up wins, staying in Gunther's ear. Maybe you have Sami Zayn out watching a match and Gunther takes his eye off the ball for a second and we get a close near fall. Like, there are things you can do for this story to really make Sami Zayn seem like this threat to Gunther, who doesn't want to show it. So I hope they don't rush this. Like, you can extend this and get a couple months out of this if you really play your cards right. By having somebody else challenge and having Sami Zayn just being around, picking up wins and just being around. I think that's the best way to go about this, but this is a good segment.
I agree. Really good segment. Building hype for this championship match, which I'm looking forward to very soon. So all in all, this is a win for me. As we get to the best match on Monday Night Raw by a lot, it was Bianca Belair versus Io Sky. It was supposed to be Kairi Sane, but Kairi's not clear to compete. So Io says, hey, let's do it. And Bianca says, I'm game too. So I thought this match was great. Like, this is a reminder of how great Bianca Belair is and how great Io Sky is and how special their chemistry is. Truly, it is a sight to behold. The counters, the athleticism, the skill set both ladies possess is amazing. The fans in Portland were hot all night. They love this match as well. It was so good, so athletic, so smooth. Joe Tessitore was incredible on the call. The spot was the crazy dive on the outside by Io to Bianca Belair. And Bianca is going to power up Io, walk her up the steps, suplexes her in the ring, goes for the 450, misses, but is able to go for the KOD. But Io is going to counter that into a roll-up to shockingly pin Bianca Belair. And that was a surprising finish because we know that both ladies rarely, rarely lose in WWE, but this was a nice pickup victory for Io Sky. And I expect them to have a match for those tag team titles with Jade and Kairi when she's cleared. and that should be a lot of fun. But this match really is a reminder of what we need in the singles division when it comes to Bianca Belair and Io Sky being unleashed, whether it's for a championship or not.
Yeah, that's probably not happening anytime soon. I think they'll be entrenched into the tag division. And with Bayley on the way, I could see Bayley kind of come back and he'll be like, nah, I'm not trying to rock with you. Then the tag title match, Bayley interferes. We got new tag champions, sparks Bianca's hatred. It's all making sense right now. The match was great. They do have great chemistry. I will say a major difference in the booking of Bianca Belair between Vince and Triple H is Bianca Belair didn't take no losses. Not randomly, at least. So I don't think Bianca would have lost this. So, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with Io Sky winning this match. She's a former champion. She should be treated as a top-tier babyface on the brand, which is what she is right now. So, everything about this was good.
Yeah, I agree. And the booking is very different. And I want to see what happens when Bianca matriculates out of the tag team division back in the singles division as a big time star, because there are some matches out there that are still big for Bianca. We got the Charlotte match we've not seen at a WrestleMania, and we know the Rhea match is what a lot of people want to see. They've been delaying that for years. So those are two big matches we need to see unleashed. We got Jade probably coming up soon as well. So there are options for Bianca Belair, and there is time to do it. So hopefully when she gets out of this tag team fix, we'll get to see her flourish in the singles division, vying for a championship again very soon.
Let's hope.
Yes, let's hope so. All right, now let's get to the main event of Monday Night Raw, which was Damian Priest versus Dirty Dominic Mysterio. We had Liv taunt Damian backstage before this match, which was a lot of fun. Then we have this match, which was all about Dirty Dom running from Damian Priest. Then he has like moments of offense here and there. And the match is going along until we got interference from Judgment Day, as we have Damian Priest fighting them off. And then in a great spot, we have Rhea Ripley tackling Liv Morgan over the announce table, wiping out Wade Barrett in a fun spot. And after all of that action, we have Priest taking out JD McDonagh and Carlito, and Finn scurries away. And that leads to him hitting South of Heaven on Dominic Mysterio for the 1-2-3 clean victory, got the W, but gets beat up by Judgment Day. Liv Morgan joins in, takes out Rhea Ripley as well. And as main event, Jey Uso tries to make the save for his new friends, someone in a hoodie spears him. And it is none other than Braun Breaker saying, not tonight, got my lick back. Won't be saving you buddies. He leaves, and that leads to Judgment Day going after Damian Priest. Liv takes out Rhea with an oblivion as she makes Rhea watch Finn Balor hit numerous coup de grace on Damian Priest to wear that guy out, heading into their match at Bad Blood as well. So all in all, great heat segment to wrap up the show, with the Judgment Day standing tall to get their heat back after losing it for the last couple of weeks.
Yep, this did exactly what it needed to do. Liv and Finn stand tall as far as getting to get the final lick over their opponents, and Braun Breaker got his back. So, you know, we thought we were going to leave with Jey standing tall, and Jey ends up getting taken out. So it does kind of leave you wondering, does he have what it takes next week? Because normally whoever's left laying is the one who normally comes out on top. So I like the way they left a little intrigue there.
Yes, and we know that booking in WWE is not exactly conventional, that even though we see this play out numerous times, guy gets laid out, they win their match at the next show, that might not be the case. He just might lose to Braun Breaker, because who needs to rub more, Braun or Jey? Like, Jey will be fine. It's about Braun right now, and he's just being established as the champion, so we'll see what direction they go in next Monday. But let's briefly talk about NXT, which went down tonight on USA. We're not going to talk about last week's show, because that's last week. But what happened last week was Trick Williams earned the right to face All Ego Ethan Page for the NXT Championship at the first NXT on the CW on October 1st. And they tried to have a contract signing with Ava, which was to no avail, as Ego put Trick through a table. And then later on in the show, we would have Scott's good friend from the Indiana Pacers, Tyrese Halliburton, oversee the contract signing. And Scott says that is not my friend. In the main event segment, I will say for Tyrese, who I will give Cheddar Biscuits to. I did enjoy him being a troll to the Orlando crowd as he brought his Pacers brethren there to troll the Magic. But above all else, I want to know where he got that HBK shirt. That was very, very clean.
Oh, apparently HBK was handing out all his gear because JC Jane had his sunglasses. So I guess he just opened his closet and everybody's like, hey, anybody wants one, take it. I mean, what is JC Jane doing? Is she reincarnating the 1995-96 Shawn Michaels right now?
Yes, that is his glory era. That was his glory era, even if he doesn't remember it.
He don't even know what happened.
No,
but that is definitely what she's going after, and that's cool. Like, I think it's a good look for her. I think it's a good vibe for her. But I just, yeah, that's where he got his shirt from. Same place she got her glasses from.
The Shawn Michaels
and Diesel's gloves.
Yes, and the gloves. We cannot forget the gloves. So went to the Shawn Michaels Superstore at NXT. So good for them to get that merch during last night's show. But let's get to our next item of business, which was Lyra Valkyria, Scott's girl, and Tatum Paxley versus Rosemary and Wendy Choo. Thought this was a good tag team match. I think Rosemary is much better in the last few weeks versus her initial debut. Love how she talks, obviously, when she gives some purpose to what the hell is going on with Wendy Choo, as Wendy Choo probably had her best match because she heard Scott. She heard what he had to say a couple weeks ago, like, she all right? She fine? She went out there with Jordynne Grace and they had a banger at the TNA event on Friday. She said, I got something to show him. And I'm like, okay, there she go. And she did. Like, ball out, Wendy. Ball out. And she did. Even ball out in this match a little bit, too. So I enjoyed it. And Lyra and Tatum got the W. All in all, fun match.
Yeah, Wendy Choo decided to take an extra long nap so she could work at a higher rate at the TNA pay-per-view, but she don't want to take no long nap and would do that here at NXT. That's cool. She's been up in her game. That's cool. I thought Tatum looked real good in this matchup. I thought she in particular stood out in a really good way. I thought she brought a lot of energy. I thought the drop kicks in particular looked really good. So this tag team's cool. Especially if Lyra's not going to be doing anything serious on Raw. You know, all they got her doing is with the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang Gang right now. So she's stuck with that. It seems like they are kind of beefing up that women's tag division a little bit, slowly but surely. So I'm cool with this.
See, when you circle back to Nostradamus, which is me, I try to tell you they was trying to get them as a tag team. I try to tell you. Everything is deliberate. Yeah. Because that could be the first match on the CW. It could be Bianca Belair and Jade versus Lyra and Tatum. Who else would they face? Fatal Influence, really? No.
Probably.
No.
Probably.
Mm.
Actually, that's probably exactly who they would face.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, that's the top heel team on the, because they're not going to have them face Wendy Choo and Rosemary.
No, they won't. But I would want some heat. Vader Influence would not have a lot of heat, I'm just saying. So regardless of the match combination of who's going to be in it, but we'll see how they navigate this in the next couple of weeks, because they got to make an announcement soon. This is going to be the final show on USA for NXT next Tuesday after a long partnership on that network. Now, let's get to other notables from NXT. Another notable that I enjoyed was the fact that Tony D'Angelo lost his smile because he cannot beat Obafemi. He had Hammerstone do the job last week and failed. So he decided to take on Hammerstone and he just glitched. He walked out and Hammerstone won via countout. And backstage, Obafemi, even before Tony D gave up, said, I broke that man. And sure enough, he broke that man. And Tony D walked away just dejected and crestfallen. And then we had Rizzo go backstage, try to pep talk as if we're watching a family heart-to-heart on The Sopranos. And she gave him words of encouragement and strength to say, you can do this. Hell, even if you lose, at least you tried. You won't be a coward. You won't go out like a punk. If you win or lose, at least you said you tried. And Tony D says, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to go after Oprah Femi one more time for the North American Championship. I like this little storyline. We need some Tony D'Angelo layers on the show. He has been one of the more tenured stars on this show, predating what we had nearly 3 years ago with 2.0. He's been in the system for 3 years. And I think at some point soon, he's got to graduate to the main roster. And I think we're inching closer to that. Win or lose, he is main roster bound soon, if I had to guess.
Yeah, this is a nice little Rocky storyline. You could go Rocky 3 when he lost to Mr. T, Oba being Mr. T, or you could do Rocky 4, and he did call him the machine, and Oba's the Russian. And you got to break down the machine. So I like the – this is different from what you normally see, especially from a ultra-tough guy like Tony D. I think this is a good way to build some sympathy for him, build some intrigue, because you're going to really build up to a match where you're probably right, where it's going to be, if I can't do this, I don't need to be here anymore. And it's probably where we're leading to with this storyline. So I could definitely see a – if I lose, I leave NXT, or I'm going to take your NXT title. So I'm looking forward to it. I like I said, I think Tony D's got some of the best babyface fire on the NXT roster. And he's one of the few guys who can toss Oba around and really get that crowd into it. So I'm intrigued by this. I look forward to it. And I look forward to seeing what the payoff is, whether it's him being forced to leave by taking the L or him getting the big victory and winning the North American Championship.
Me too. It's going to go one way or another. And this guy has shown layers, which is nice to see, because you don't want to be a one-dimensional gangster. You want to have layers to your character that makes you viable on the main roster, not make him so one note, even though he's very charismatic in this role and very few can pull it off. Like, you're basically a mobster that has gotten away with murder numerous times on this show. So you have to make him sympathetic in some ways. And I think they did so by having him doubt himself against Oba Femi. And that builds up a story for their rematch, possibly at the CW premiere week one or two on the CW. So let's go there and do that very soon as we get to CM Punk, who is our special guest tonight. And he has some things to say as he waxes poetically about NXT in the future when Roxanne Perez comes out. And she talks about how CM Punk was her childhood hero, but she preferred his wife. And that got a pop. And I was like, in what context? You know, I was curious about that, how she said that. That was very spicy of her. You know, got my attention. What was your intentions, Roxanne? I'm just saying. So she goes on and on and on. And then she delivers a line that actually made me laugh. She said, you know what? Upon further review, you know what? I prefer Drew McIntyre. That's who I roll with. You know, I'm a Drew McIntyre girl. F-U-C-M Punk. So Punk is like, okay. All right, you want to talk that talk? Well, let's bring out someone that you are afraid to face for your NXT Women's Championship on the debut of the C-Dub in Chicago. My hometown, Julia, comes out. They go face-to-face. And as Roxanne tries to take a swing on Julia from behind, CM Punk breaks it up. And we are going to get that match night one on the C-Dub. Looking forward to that. And we know that CM Punk was supposed to make some kind of announcement during the show. We did not get that until the end, but I thought for what this was by far the most comfortable Roxanne Perez has ever been on a microphone, either as a babyface or a heel. I need more of that. And that's primarily due to CM Punk being a great person out there to really vibe with, in terms of that's her hero. That's someone she legit looked up to, and they have worked together on NXT behind the scenes before, and you felt that rapport, and she volleyed real good, and she was very comfortable in that setting. I need more of that. If you can do that with your hero, do that alone, and then I think you'll find your sweet spot as a heel moving forward.
So, a good segment. Roxanne was good. CM Punk was just there to rah-rah, and that's fine. And Julia wasn't asked to do much except come out there and look good, and she does that. Anyway, so this all worked out real well. Not much to add to it. This was effective for what it was. And it was a nice way to bring CM Punk out and still be able to save him for the main event.
Yeah, absolutely. So like a tease for things to come, because I know this isn't false advertising because he has an announcement to make and we didn't get it during this segment. So I knew he was coming back because Tyrese Halliburton was not going to be like the actual surprise to end the show. We got that cliffhanger at the end, which was good. As we get to some Fader influence stuff, as Lola Vice and your girl Jada Parker are reluctant partners right now, and we'll see where they go. As you said, they are building up things in the women's tag team division. They could be a potential team with some animosity, but mutual respect down the road as they're building up Lola Vice as a face. And basically, Jada is going to be a baby face, but she's still kind of quasi in between. She wants to be a loner, doing things for herself, by herself.
Well, it's Dusty Cup time, so they're just putting teams together so that way they can fill out the bracket. I mean, that's all that's going on here. They're not slick. Once Vic said it, I was like, ah, there it is. Now it makes sense. Y'all ain't slick. Y'all found 16 women. I was like, yep, let's put y'all in some teams. We got a cup to fill out. They're doing the same thing to the men, so don't worry. They're doing the same thing on the men's side. Even though the Evans-Alexander team could be a lot of fun. But yeah, this was fine. The match later on was good. I like the back fist finish was nice. And JC, I think JC's a fine in-ring talent. I think she holds her own. She's nothing special, but she more than holds her own in the ring. And I thought this was a good segue to the match, played into the match really well with them not getting along. And I thought the tease of the back fist from Lola for the attack right there between Jalen and Lola was really good too.
Yes, very good. And, you know, JC understands the assignment. She's solid in the ring. You know, she's there for every spot, knows what to do out there, which I like. So she's a great anchor for this faction that she's running. It is given Bootleg, Fatal Attraction, or Toxic Attraction, whatever we want to call them way back when. But they got to make it their own. And hopefully they will. But they're doing the same dance Toxic Attraction did 3 years ago. So hopefully they can kind of figure it out in time. But we'll see where it goes in the weeks to come. As we move on to, as we mentioned, a potential new tag team of Javon Evans and Cedric Alexander going up against the No Quarter Catch Crews, Miles Bourne and Tavion Heights. Solid match. You know, Javon got the win, which was good to see. And we got a tweet from Randy Orton who says, I will be in St. Louis for NXT week 2 DW, and guess who your opponent is going to be, Javon? It will be me. So we're basically going to see the most spectacular RKO ever. Cool. Mm-hmm. Bet.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the match. I think it's going to be really good. The RKO will come off a springboard, off the twist. He'll catch him on the twist on the way down.
And it'll be spectacular. And even though Javon will eat that L, he will be a made man. And then Randy will raise his hand and say, respect, son. And he'll be fine. He'll be fine. You're going to get the Orton rub. He's going to be all right. So let's not panic. He's still got time to be a player on this show. He's only 21 years old. He's going to be fine. He is going to be fine. As we get to the closing angle of NXT, which was Tyrese Halliburton, Scott Young's favorite player in the NBA, as he is he's overseeing the contract signing between Trick Williams and All Ego Ethan Page. Comes out there, both guys going at it once again, and they sign the contract, all well and good. CM Punk comes out to make that official announcement saying, you know what, a match like this with two guys who are very different, who are going to set the tone for this move to the CW, it needs something special. You know, it needs something special. And the referee angle hit the crowd pretty fast saying, special guest referee, referee, referee. And he says, yes, absolutely. This match needs a special guest referee. And that is I will be special guest referee for this match in the next 2 weeks in my hometown of Chicago. And I want a clean fight. You will listen to me. You will listen, and there will be a winner. And he says, well, since you're here and since you know what I say goes, I have no problem with you guys going at it right now as Trick and Ego go at it. They brawl back and forth for a bit as Punk just smiles and watches all the chaos unfold as NXT goes off the air a little after 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern. So all in all, the next to last show on the USA Network was a good one to set the tone and table for the move to the CW. My only question is, on your last show on USA, you really want to do a press conference?
Yeah, it's a phone-in show. I mean, they're clearly not concerned with it. They got their bread and they out. So, and this segment was good. The ending with them two looking like two pit bulls ready to chew each other's face off was an interesting segment. Of CM Punk in the back, like, that was cool. CM Punk is a ref. That's a nice hook having him there. Hopefully he doesn't overshadow the match, which is always a worry, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, this was a effective segment to close out, and fully expect Trick to reclaim his title in a couple weeks.
Yes, absolutely. So as we said, we needed a big setting for this coronation in front of a big crowd. Chicago is that crowd, and I'm here for that. I think Scott has outside hope for, you know, someone to come out there to reunite the North. If that happens, I will accept that. If anything else happens, I will be flipping tables on this show. I just want to clarify that for the record. It will be Trick Williams mostly or bust, and we'll see where it goes from there. But overall, solid show. I think that next week will be like that lame duck, we're out of here episode. Let's just get ready to go to the CW and make sure people know where the station is for our launch on October 1st. And with that, that is everything that was so far in WWE with one show to go, which is SmackDown on Fox, or I should say USA. Got to get used to that. USA going down on Friday with The Rock. With not The Rock. I'm like counting ahead to WrestleMania season, like with Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. Maybe The Rock shows up. Maybe I'm lying. You never know. Surprises galore. But in any event, Scott, as you wind down the episode, what was your favorite match of the week? And let me just prepare myself right now for what you're going to say.
I don't know what for. My favorite match of the week was just Tony Khan and the Grand Slam attendance. I mean, we got a long ways to go, but you know, we're a far off way from 20K. I can tell you that much. So shout out to you and shout out to the Grand Slam.
Your burns every week have been brutal. Tony Khan versus Juneteenth is still your
I won't be topping that. There's nothing I'm gonna be able to say to top that one.
That is your Mount Everest of burns that cannot be topped. Just staggered me that night. It just staggered me when you said that. I was not prepared because I thought I was going to get a serious answer from you. And you said, we're not going to be doing that tonight. I'm just going to go there and just burn this man to the core of his being. And you did. But in all seriousness, across all the shows, and there are many, your legit favorite match of the week.
Man, I'm going to keep it a buck. I really enjoyed Solo versus Cody, man. I came away very impressed with it. Simply because I don't have high expectations for Solo matches. And I thought this was a really good one. He looked like the brute he should be.
I agree 100%. I thought it was a really good match. And I am not going to give them the win because I thought that Bianca Belair and Io Sky was superior on Monday Night Raw. That match was just great. Mm-hmm. Joe Tessitore, he is becoming a great play-by-play guy. And like I said, from week one, it was a little affected in terms of, are you really into it? Oh, he's into it now. Like, he's just marking out for like all the hot spots and really rising to the occasion in terms of the dramatics and emotions of it all. Great storyteller. He sucks you in via what he says. And it just feels real, which I appreciate. Wasn't as real like week one because you're nervous. It's like Tom Brady. That's a comparison. Tom Brady, who starts his, you know, color commentary career on Fox and people dog him out like he sucks. Week two, comfortable. Looked at the tape, looked at the footage, settle in, and you find your way and you find your voice. And that is happening with Joe too. So both guys, to me, are finding their way and familiar places to them that they followed. But unfamiliar places in terms of calling the action and just in this environment, but they're coming through in the clutch.
Yeah, I think he's been really good. I mean, you can't expect but so much from somebody on their first time, and I think he's going to be a fine addition. He won't be calling any Mania main events, but he will definitely be able to hold his own in any match he's calling.
Yeah, and if the time comes for Michael Cole to say, I retire, you got your guy right here.
Yeah.
You got him. So with that, this was a fun episode of The Wrap right here on the Fight Game Media Network. I want to thank my co-captain, the one and only, the scout, Softy Scott Young, for joining me as we talk the week that was so far in WWE.
Thank you for having me, Keila. As always, it's a pleasure to chop it up and talk all things WWE. We'll be back next week. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully we go for 3 for 3 good weeks of WWE shows.
Yeah, which is a rarity as we have NXT moving to CW in a couple of weeks time. SmackDown on USA officially. Monday Night Raw going to 2 hours in a couple of weeks, which is a blessing to make sure we end our night earlier than usual, which is going to be a blessing moving forward there. So things are changing in WWE and we're just rolling with it. And the shows have been very good lately across the board. So until then, that was the week so far in WWE. I hope that you enjoy the episode. We'll be back next Tuesday morning, hopefully, recapping all things Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, not NXT, because, hey, we already talked about it for this week. That's a bonus. But we'll be back to talk about Bad Blood. That's coming up imminently as well in Atlanta with that 6 p.m. start time that Scott is dreading. And he says off top, we will not be live. We'll see you on Sunday morning, basically.
Yeah, and
I love his honesty. He was like, what we're not going to do is that.
Yeah, that 6 o'clock is crazy. It's still going to be daylight outside.
Yeah, so we know that the daylight is coming a little bit short, but it's still going to be some sun out there for like another like 90 minutes wherever you live in America. But until then, for myself and for the scout, Salty Scott Young, that is a wrap for all things WWE. Until next Tuesday, take care and bye-bye.